You're listening to TJ Talks. This podcast probably is going to contain a lot of explicit language, so you're forewarned. All right, welcome to TJ Talks. I am Judd.
And I'm Teresa.
Here we are. It is the last week of October. Can you believe it?
Yes, I can. October is a busy month for us. We have birthdays and anniversaries, so we've had a lot of celebrating to do.
That's awesome.
And now we get to go out with some candy.
Man, yeah, that's true. I have not bought any candy for Halloween, but I do.
What? Are you going to get trick-or-treaters at your place?
I have no idea, but I probably won't be here for it. I have a date that evening.
Ooh.
And then we're all going to a little party after my date. Then we're going together.
Party. Costume party or no?
No, no costumes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not dressing up either.
No.
I don't have time for that. I can't even think of anything. I can barely get dressed every day.
You know,
let alone dressed up.
We don't have time for that at the party. I mean, who's going to be wearing costumes or clothes? I mean,
or clothing
right.
at all?
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's a clothing optional party. I like this.
I wish it was.
Happy Halloween, baby.
I know.
Or Halloweeny, I guess, when you're clothing optional.
But yeah.
All right, so what are you drinking today? I can't even believe I let you say this out loud.
I'm drinking ginger ale tonight. How's
there
that?
There you go. Ginger ale.
Ginger
That's
ale. Yeah. And this is the last ginger ale I probably will ever drink.
Aw.
Well, from this company.
From that company, anyway.
From this company. Yes. Whose stock is in the dumper.
What?
Oh, my God.
Who'd have thunk? Good for you. No, it's fine. It's fine to drink that. I'm drinking my, you know, traditional white wine.
Uh-huh.
So, not a spritzer. Not. I'm doing it straight. Straight from the carafe.
Wow. Oh.
And life is gooder.
Life is gooder.
We need it. There's some interesting topics today we're going to talk about. So I need a little liquid courage to get into this.
I know. We have a bunch of great topics tonight. We have, you know what? I'm not going to call out the first one first. I will call it out, though. It won't be in the, we're going to do it in a different order, but this is what we're going to talk about. Catcalling.
Yeah.
It's something going on the internets that there's a lady who posted something. We're going to talk about that.
Yep.
There was an article in Slate.com that we'd like to talk about. Can you be fired for being kinky, having a naughty lifestyle? Let's see. Like to talk about the Fitbit and the new app. They have new challenges, and Fitbit actually came out with a new product.
Yeah, they have a bunch of new products.
Yeah, right after we buy our Fitbits, those bastards come out with something a little cooler.
With just marketing ploys, you know, direct from Apple, the week before I get my iPad, you know, yes.
No shit. And then, and then we're going to, at some point, we're going to wrap this in. We'll actually talk about it first. Is Ebola. I mean, how do you not talk about that? You know, it's everywhere, but it's nowhere.
And the jokes write themselves about some of this stuff. So, yes, we're going to talk about Ebola because we have to, because everyone is.
Right. And then finally, our awesome segment of show and tell.
You show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Hell yeah.
All right. So what's first on the hit parade?
We're going to talk about Ebola.
Oh, okay,
let's
good.
Let's just get it out of the way, because that's like the hard topic. That's the one that's all that stuff going on.
What is the funniest thing about Ebola?
The name. Ebola. I don't know.
Yeah, sounds like something you would do between women's breasts. Ebola. No, the funniest thing about Ebola, there's two funny things. And I saw a Facebook post, I think my husband actually put it, that there are more people who've been married to Kim Kardashian than who have died of Ebola in the United States. But we're all in Ebola panic frenzy countdown. You know, we're all going to be decimated by Ebola. And then the second funny thing is that New York City doctor, who just recently got diagnosed, and he'd been back from Liberia or wherever he was in West Africa. And then he had the fever of 100.3 versus 103. And he went bowling at some bowling alley called the Gutter in Brooklyn.
Ebola bowling.
He went e-bowling. And I can't stop giggling about that. It's silly. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, and And when you think about it, Judd, okay, so here's the things about Ebola that freak me out that aren't funny.
Right.
I get it. I'm not going to get Ebola. No one I know is going to get Ebola. I get it. But, and it's a big but, it is really awful. And it is, when you really think about the global world that we live in, it is not difficult for one doctor in New York City to have it and be symptomatic. I get it. He's not having diarrhea in someone's mouth. And I understand the really full contact sport that it is to catch Ebola. But his connection with people was quite expansive, right? So that's interesting.
But here's the thing is, why did this guy get it? How did he get it?
Well, and of course, he was over there doing a Doctors Without Borders thing.
Wow.
And so how he got exposed. And I have seen so much news, good and bad. What's his name? Sanjay Gupta, the guy on CNN,
right?
Showed about how when they wear all the garb to be protected, mm-hmm. all the face masks and the suits and all that, and if you have Ebola on you, and you go to take that stuff off, interestingly enough, you just get stuff on you because, you know, hell, I can't go for a walk with my dog, pick up the dog poop, and somehow not get it on my fingernail, right? Like, it just... Even with all the plastic bags and accoutrement in the world. So when you have that kind of liquid bodily fluid, it does feel like it's easily mushed around.
Well, I will say that when I was in the Navy on the submarine, we would do these practice drills in case we had radiation.
Okay.
And we wore a big suit. They called it a canary suit, which was very similar. And you had to put on, you know, three sets of gloves and, you know, and all of this kind of stuff. And and then part of the practice was taking it off.
Right.
Because you didn't want to get radiation on you as you took it off.
Right.
And then immediately as you took it off, you run in the shower and they freaking, you know, take wire brushes to your whole body. So I don't know. I'm thinking that if you go through a proper decontamination, I think that Sanjay Gupta is a little full of Ebola.
So let me ask you this, and I haven't gotten a good answer on this. Okay, so a mandatory travel ban on people from Ebola-affected regions, specifically West Africa,
right?
That the Congress and the president don't want to do it because they don't want... They feel like it's going to limit our ability to catch people coming from that territory. Because if somebody can't fly here directly from Liberia, they're going to fly to Paris first and then Paris to JFK. And so we won't know. Our travel ban won't mean anything because they just went to another city and then still got here. But here's the thing. I understand you don't want to have the travel ban. But then don't we have any way of knowing where people are coming from and in where they just were before they got here? Like when you apply for your visa to visit, you have to have some sort of address history. I guess I don't understand the argument against the travel ban.
If you're French and you go to Liberia and let's say they don't necessarily stamp your passport, because have you ever been out of the country and they didn't stamp your passport?
I don't think I've ever had that experience. I've always had it stamped, I believe.
Like, if you go to Mexico with your passport, I guarantee you they don't stamp it.
Okay.
Okay. So now you're in Mexico.
Right.
So now you want to go somewhere else. You can go somewhere else.
And no one's going to know that I was in Mexico.
No.
Well, then that should be that what we get changed then. And let's not have this mandatory travel ban, but let's have a respected law amongst civilized countries around the world that we will have a travel history of our inhabitants coming in and out. I'm not restricting anyone from doing it. I'm not. I'm just saying, let's put a name and a date by when you were there. What's so wrong with that?
But to come into the United States anyways, if you're a foreigner, you have to most likely have a visa to come to the
United States. That's what I'm saying. And you have to... But you apply for that visa somewhere, and if you flew from Liberia to Paris and you apply for the visa in Paris, then no one's going to know that you came from Liberia.
Right.
And I think it would be interesting to have a way to track that. I'm not trying to limit anyone coming here. I'm not trying to stop anyone from coming here.
Oh,
I'm
yes,
just trying to say,
totally
Right. Yeah. This is my voter. This is going to really upset the apple cart. But I don't think voter ID mm-hmm. is voter suppression. I don't.
No.
I don't think it is. And I do not understand. I don't understand why that. First of all, voter fraud isn't a thing, right? It's less than 0.03% of voting issues. So it's not really a thing to waste any time on. But I still don't think it's a huge, horrible requirement to ask someone to show a form of ID when they go to vote.
Since we're going down this road, I'm going to just give you the other side of the story that people bring up.
Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know that you're wrong. I'm not necessarily disagreeing. In 2014, to get services from the government, you apparently need or should have some sort of ID. I mean,
isn't it right? Great.
So, great. But they claim in rural America that there are many elderly people who don't have ID.
So how many?
I don't know. But
let's have a publicly funded campaign to get them an ID. Like, this to me is a very easy problem to solve.
If they can get your ass to the poll, they can get your ass to an ID making station.
I just don't view it as voter suppression.
Right.
I understand that those disenfranchised folks who are in rural Appalachia, whatever, bumfuck Tennessee, who can't get a driver's license or a form of ID, okay, and I'm not saying that their vote shouldn't count, or they shouldn't get the chance to vote. I'm just saying it's 2014. Get a picture ID.
But, you know, here's the funny thing, is that you can vote absentee, and I don't know that you need an ID to get an absentee.
You don't. I have an absentee ballot right now I'm going to mail off, and my vote's going to count, right?
And what ID did you show to get that?
Done.
Right. So you register, you know, you're done. So I'm not sure that it really matters, but I get the sentiment that on election day, you're watching the poll numbers come in, you know, and you go, and someone goes, hey, let's get more people over there. You know, we need 2,000 more people to elect our guy. Go vote again.
Go vote again. But this isn't happening, right? That just doesn't happen.
No one's proved that it's ever happened.
Right.
Ever.
It's not a crime. So, I mean, to get a library card, I had to show an ID. So I just don't understand why it's that horrible. And for someone who can prove that they don't have ID and because they can't afford ID or whatever, then give them the absentee ballot and let's just call it a day. I just don't get the argument that it's suppression.
Well, I think that you have a certain segment of the population also that feels that, you know, it depends on you. People want to use the Nazi argument whenever they feel like it.
It's the go-to. It's a thing, right?
It's,
yeah,
it's the go-to thing. All conversations will lead to
Nazis.
The Nazis, right? To Hitler and the Nazis. But right. You know, it comes down to this: show me your papers. You know,
I don't want to live in that society, and I don't think that's cool. We're talking about going to vote where they're looking for your name on a list, and then you say, yes, I'm, you know, Teresa Roosevelt, and she finds my name, and then let me see your ID. And so, yes, my name at least matches the piece of plastic I'm going to hand her, which could be equally as bogus as me saying that my name is Teresa Roosevelt. I don't see it as suppression. I just don't.
I mean, you don't want people from a neighboring city to come over and vote for your mayor. And vote the person that you don't want as mayor.
I guess
it's
in their best interest. Right. But I heard a number last night or the day before on The Daily Show where they were talking about this voter ID thing and how it would disenfranchise almost 700,000 voters in the state of Texas. And I'm thinking, what? Those 700,000 people, none of them have fucking cable TV. None of them have, you know, I know that makes me sound white and elitist or something. And I don't mean it to be that way. But really, I just don't get it. So I'm horrible.
No.
It feels commonsensical to me that you would say, "Hi, I'm Teresa. I'm here to vote. Here's my proof of ID." I don't know.
Okay, so back to Ebola.
How did we get on this conversation? Trust me, voting is, you know, the election season is worse than Ebola season.
So we're bring us back in how we got here is we're talking about getting people to show ID so that if they have to come to the country, so we don't have people with Ebola, you know, coming in.
And I'm not saying that people from West Africa should all be banned. I just think, okay, we should just know, maybe.
But, you know, the reason why it seems to me that we're all paranoid, in a way.
Because of the news?
Because of Michael Crichton.
Oh, yes!
I totally blame the movies. Every zombie outbreak movie, whatever it is.
It's totally that Stephen King movie, The Stand.
It's The Stand. It's,
yes.
What was that one, 20-something days or whatever? The monkey bites one person, and before you know it, the entire world is all dead or frothing zombified. At the mouth.
Yes. No, I get it. It's movies. You're right. We have, and it's sensational, and it's fascinating, and it's so gory and awful, and we can't stop talking about it.
Didn't we have one last year, and they had, like, the antidote, and only certain people in the government were getting it, and it was like this whole... Do you remember this movie? It was like It was like the big movie. Everybody had to see it. And it had some real big stars in it, too.
You know me. I'm not big on... I love bad humor, and I love too soon humor. The guy on the airplane a couple weeks ago who sneezed and said, oh, I got Ebola, and then they had to call in the FAA and keep the airplane away from the gate and all that because he made a bad joke about it.
Oh, is that all it was? Was it a joke?
Yes, it was a joke. He was being an asshole. It's the whole, you know, I have a bomb in my suitcase as you're going through TSA. You just can't say those things.
Right. You don't say that after having sex either.
No.
Oh, by the way, I have Ebola.
FYI. Yeah. Things to not say for pillow talk.
Right.
Yeah, I know Ebola's going to run its course. I'm curious as to how much more frenzy we're going to have. It does feel like we kind of dropped the ball a little bit on handling it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. It feels like everything we do nowadays, we don't do it very well, at least not the first time.
Right.
And as Americans, I think that's a little bit of a shame and that we should be a little bit mad about that. Like, what do you mean that guy went to the hospital and then got turned away in order to reinfect more people or expose himself to more people?
What was the Michael Crichton movie? Because the Michael Crichton movie, though, was specifically about Ebola, right?
Oh, Outbreak.
It was Outbreak.
Yeah, Outbreak. But that's been years ago that was out. Yeah.
But that was Ebola that he wrote in that book and showed or claimed.
Right.
And of course, Michael Crichton he's passed away now, was a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he comes in with this medical gravitas.
Yes, well, he's cloning dinosaurs. The medical gravitas really comes through. But yes, no, I agree. Right.
You know, so in his fantasy world, we're all should be dead by now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, I think two things, you know, you've probably heard all these points before, mm-hmm. but the fear factor is really crazy. And the way that people are responding to it and the way the news media is making it so ridiculous. And this whole, you know, aren't we the home of the brave? And we're just such fucking pussies. I just hate that. It makes me a little cranky. I don't know. Mm. I don't fear no Ebola. I don't fear, you know, I don't. And I absolutely respect medical professionals who go over there. And the woman, the nurse in New Jersey who Chris Christie locked up for 21 days in the tent with the portable toilet, you know, that poor lady who has just been quarantined without any showing of symptoms or without any reason, really. So, she's like, what's wrong with you? Why were you doing this to me? I don't, you know.
So here's the real question. Can you now go to work and claim Ebola fear and say, I need to work from home?
I'm sure you can.
You know, just walk in with a face mask thing on and say,
yeah.
I can't be confident that I don't, you know, someone sneezes, they touch their hand, they touch the knob of a doorknob, and boom, before you know it, I got Ebola because of you bastards.
It could all happen.
You know, you are not protecting me. It's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
I'm sure some lawyer wants to get right on that.
Yeah. All right, we're enough Ebola talk.
All right. And we've contaminated it.
Totally. So, hey, Teresa.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, your hair looks sexy.
And if I was walking down the street, what would you say to me? Yeah.
Hey, baby. All right. I'm making fun, but this is a serious topic. And it's an interesting topic because I watched the video. This lady spent 10 hours, and I guess she had someone following her in a backpack.
She was walking behind a guy who had a backpack on with a camera in it.
Yeah. 10 hours, and just to see how men, particularly men, I didn't catch if any women did, but respond to her in some way, shape, or form. She was wearing okay clothes. They weren't like, she wasn't wearing short shorts or anything.
She was wearing jeans and a t-shirt.
Jeans and a t-shirt.
Yes.
It wasn't really, I didn't think it was that low cut, the way they
No, it's
it.
Not. It's not low cut at all.
No. But I mean, it wasn't super modest, but it wasn't.
She wasn't wearing anything different than what you're wearing right now.
Right. That's it.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, this is an interesting topic, and I'm going to talk too much, so tell me when to shut up. But okay. This has come up a little bit lately, and Daily Show did a segment on this with, what's her name, Jessica Williams, the new correspondent, and she did a brief similar type video where she's walking through the streets of Manhattan about how you have to have your bitch face on. And so that people don't make eye contact with you or talk to you. You have to be plugged into headphones or whatever so you're not being accosted. You have to act a little bit crazy. If you act like, you know, you're a homeless person and acting crazy, then people won't bother you. And I hate to say it, Judd, because I'm 45 years old. But, yeah, it's kind of annoying to walk down the street and get talked to in a way that's not cool.
Does this happen everywhere?
It happens everywhere. So it happens to everyone. It's not just New York. I think New York is pervasive for it because street traffic and walking and pedestrians are prevalent, right? In Los Angeles, I can drive down the freeway and have someone staring at me, gawking at me on the freeway in a car. And it's weird. And it's a weird line to walk for men. And I appreciate men that are trying to be pseudo flirtatious and friendly, but that borderline of creepy is always right there. And I don't know how to tell men how to avoid that other than just fucking drive or just leave me alone.
Isn't it the stranger aspect that's the creepy thing?
Absolutely. Yes.
It's not someone that you meet where it's casual. Like you go to the grocery store and you go to up and down the aisle and you see the person three times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then someone makes a comment. Okay, is that creepy?
No, that's not creepy because that's happenstance.
Right.
If you can feel like that person is following you up and down the aisle, then that gets creepy. But you have a sense of that.
See, I usually accuse the lady of stalking me.
Nice. Way to blame the victim. I like that.
That's the way I go. I say, hey, this is the third time I've seen you up and down this aisle. I think you're following me,
right? And I don't know. I can't explain to you that it feels invasive. It feels, and interestingly, the comments I've read for the people who've posted this video, calling the woman out for, well, she shouldn't wear that tight t-shirt and she shouldn't wear those tight jeans. So, you know, somehow it's her fault. Or even if she were dressed more provocatively with a tube top and Daisy Duke shorts, does she deserve to be yelled at, or are they entitled to speak to her? And the way that people, it's one thing if you make contact with someone and just say hello, eye contact, you know, because you happen to meet a gaze. That's different. The hey, mommy, the hey, sexy,
But in the video, they even seem to suggest that even the people who just said hello were out of line.
Yes.
But they were in her path walking in the opposite direction.
I listened to it. It sounds different.
Really?
A simple good morning or hey is different than a hello, how are you? You know, and yeah. Trust me, I'm not a supermodel and I'm not. But it happens. It happens to everybody. And it's upsetting that you don't get to walk down the street without having to sort of fend for yourself. And men don't have an appreciation for that, in my opinion. And I'm not a scaredy cat person. I'm not afraid to go anywhere. I'll walk anywhere at any time of the day or night. You know, I'm not right. stupid, but I'm not afraid. And there are places in this world that will tend to unnerve you because you don't feel safe. And that's not okay. It's not.
Oh no. I totally understand that.
And not unsafe because, oh, it's a crime ridden neighborhood. No, it's just, it's dark. And I don't want to walk by myself down the street because there's all these people here and that's not cool.
But you also, like in this video, in a lot of cases, people are just kind of hanging out. She's walking by. They're hanging out. They're the guy hanging on this. Why are people standing around on the street corner?
Yeah, get a fucking job, dude. You
know, yeah.
And the way that she's taunted for not responding.
Yeah.
The one guy who's, oh, you're so beautiful. And he walks beside her for a few minutes. And right, yeah. He keeps talking to her like, why won't you talk to me? If I give you my number, will you talk to me? And she doesn't say anything. She doesn't tell him to fuck off. She doesn't tell him to shut up. She doesn't say anything. He keeps going on and on. It goes on for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And somehow in some of the comments that I was reading, well, she should have just told him thanks, but no thanks. Or because she was silent to him, that was really rude of her. And like, what? She has to respond to his...
She doesn't have to respond at all.
Right. But these people were saying that she should say something about it. And it just annoys me. It just annoys me. And I'm nobody's fool. And I get it. I feel bad for young women because it is a disadvantage to be at. It really is. And the one other commentary I read about this just a moment ago was that the video peels out, a lot of Caucasian catcallers.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know why. The director of the video claims that he tried to portray as all different races and folks that were calling to her. Right. And that there were a lot of Caucasian folks who, because of the video and the quality of the sound, there's a siren going by or there's something going on by. Like there were people that were cut out just based on the fact that it just wasn't a good clip, right? But there were multiple... infractions from all races. It's not just black Hispanics.
I did notice that it was biased, or it seemed like there were a lot of minorities.
Because, right, and it said, well, she was only walking in poor neighborhoods or whatever. Okay, well, then that... But even if that were the case, what difference does it make? She should be able to walk wherever the fuck she wants to. And it just doesn't matter.
Well, but see, what you tell us here today is that it doesn't matter whether you're in Manhattan or in L.A.
True.
Or wherever. You're going to, as a woman, you're going to experience this everywhere.
Absolutely.
And this is our culture.
To what degree you experience it, I think, does depend a little bit on the socioeconomic factors of the neighborhood. But it still happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. It still happens everywhere. And I'm going to share with you a story that's a little bit like this, but not. I was at a convention recently, and I'll do my best to do the story justice. And for the fourth time today, I'm going to tell you that I'm a 45-year-old woman, and I don't take guff from anybody, and I'm, you know, quite adamant about my own personal space, and I'm not a meek or cowardly person. I'm very extroverted and outgoing. And I was having a conversation with someone about business because we were at a convention, and he asked me questions. Particular questions about manufacturing and things that are not the realm of the business that I'm in. I'm in sales, I'm in promotion and marketing. I'm not in the manufacturing side of it. So he was asking very specific questions about it. And I said, you know what? I don't have the answer to your question, but I can get it for you and I'll gladly reach out and let you know. He took his finger and tapped me on the nose like I was a bad puppy dog or some sort of admonishment to me about you really need to know your business better.
What? No.
Exactly.
Wait. I'm blown away. He actually touched you?
He touched me.
That right there is the most inappropriate thing I ever heard. And the way that he did it was demeaning and everything else.
Condescending.
Oh,
absolutely.
My God.
And I was so stymied by it. And I've told this story to a couple of people. And they're like, I would have broke his fucking finger. Or I would have bit his finger, you know. But it happened in the moment. And then it was done. Yeah. And then I didn't do anything about it. I just fucking took it, I guess. And it bothers me that I did, but I didn't have much of a recourse. And I'm in the middle of this conference with all these people. But the fact that he felt that that was okay to do to me or to anyone, and this man is a professional, or supposedly, right? Mm-hmm. So I just don't get it. It's very, very strange. It's very strange. So it was something that was upsetting and of somewhat of my personal confidence level where I don't fear anything. I just don't know how this can happen in this day and age.
I think there's more of this going on in business sexual harassment. That wasn't sexual harassment, but I guess in a way it is.
Is a little bit, right? Because yeah. It's physical contact of a finger wag thing. I don't know. It was really strange.
It's not the same as someone giving you a pat on the back or just a different whole another thing.
Yeah.
It
was a personal space violation, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And in a strange, even if he wanted to point his finger at me and say, oh, you should know your business better, or whatever it was he was trying to communicate, it was just insulting.
He crossed the line.
He would never do it to another man. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you right now that the 6 or 7 other salespeople that I work with wouldn't have known the answer to this question because it's, like I said, specific to bottle manufacturing. It wasn't something that we do every day. And it was very, very strange. And then, do you want to hear the next part?
Yeah.
So I attended something else with this fellow. Okay. I attended something else with this fellow. And we were talking to another person. Mm-hmm. And he lifted my hair up.
Whoa.
And because the guy, I had asked the guy a question. It was a fairly pointed question. And he was answering me. And he lifted my hair up to say, see, you need to listen to this guy. And I'm like, this guy just won't quit. I don't know what.
And he works for another company? Or is he a customer?
He works for a whole other company in the production field. So it really isn't someone I'm ever going to interact with on a real daily basis. It was very strange.
Wow. I see. I think that's definitely an issue that you bring up to your company.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to have any connection
with them again.
Here's the thing. If I bring it up to my company, then I'm that girl who makes complaints, right? So you can't fucking win.
You can't win. Yeah, that's weird. Well, if you ever see him, you fucking point your finger at his ass and say, here's some boundaries, motherfucker. And you cross them and your fucking dick is cut off. Done.
So of all the weird, I mean, it was just weird. And so that's a different scale of what this poor woman endured on her walk through New York City. But it's the same thing, really. It's men thinking they have a privilege over a woman. To touch them, to talk to them, to make them respond, to be interactive in a way that's not comfortable.
Did you ever see that video that they did on, was it BuzzFeed, where it's the women catcalling the men?
Yes. Oh, you look like you make a really good dad, you know.
You know, I thought that the video has a good concept, but at the end of the day, it lampooned itself.
Oh, sure.
So it was like, okay, from my male perspective, I'm like, okay, go ahead, catcall me all you like.
Well, yeah, you would eat it up. You'd be like, yeah, baby.
Right. Holy smokes.
And I get it that most men are like, what? Women always want attention. What do you mean they don't want attention or they don't want this attention? I understand that men can't win, right? Like I said, you can't. There's that weird line of being creepy versus being flirtatious and friendly. And there are times for flirtatious and friendly, and then there's not. And I don't know that just walking down the street is that time. So here's one last thing about this, because I was reading, how does the modern man flirt with feminism prevalent, right? So you're in a Starbucks, and you see a girl who's cute. And she's working on her laptop or iPad. She's got earbuds in. She's drinking her coffee and her head down, and she's working. Do you approach her or not?
It depends on how attractive, how attracted you are to her, and if there's an opening reason for you to actually break her concentration.
So the article says, you know, when someone gives you those body language signs,
right,
earphones, head down, not making eye contact, etc., that you probably shouldn't approach. But if you're going to, you should say something like, hey, are you interested in having a conversation? And if she says no or doesn't make, you know, a response, then walk away. If she says, so you need to ask people not, and I think that's the problem with these guys in this catcalling video, is they're just throwing their whim on her. Like they're, oh, you're so beautiful. Or, oh, you know, they're just throwing these compliments at her in that weird way. But it's not an interaction, and there's no asking of her if she wants to participate in the interaction. That's the part that's invasive.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're that's a good example. You're at Starbucks. You're standing mm-hmm. in line, and behind you it comes I'm a guy, and a female comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of say, I think I'll start a conversation with the
sure.
person in the line. I mm-hmm. mean, is that considered a predatorial violation of that person's space, because you try to start a conversation that may be flirty, maybe just two human beings interacting
I think, because your conversation would be, are you going to try that new clover press, your conversation wouldn't be, hey, hot stuff, I'd like you to squeeze my beans, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to say that.
No, you're not. You're totally
so
gonna say,
and that's what those guys were doing to this woman on the street. They were like being innuendo-ish.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so there's a refined way to do it that's less negative. And women do it too. It's not 1,000% just men. It's not an all or nothing factor here. There's infractions on both sides of the genders. But I think we can all agree it's more prevalent male to women.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will totally throw my gender under the bus.
So you better know how to flirt, complete with the nose tap.
Damn.
Right?
Absolutely.
Happened to me 2 weeks ago. So
that is messed up.
It is.
Beyond.
Right? And I'm not, I don't come off as an uninformed human being. It's very strange. So imagine what he thinks he could do to somebody else. Strange.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's move on. We still have a couple things to go. We got 20 minutes left in our show, maybe, if we're lucky. Okay. So the Slate article, you read it. I haven't really, I just know the headline, and I have an opinion of the headline, but can you be fired for kink for having a naughty lifestyle? And I did read a little bit. It basically was alluding to the fact that there's the potential for sexual assault and was it saying? Something about
non-consensual.
Non-consensual sex.
Right. So I assume his name is pronounced Jean, or it's J-I-A-N. I assume it's John. Maybe it's Gian Gameshi. He was a famous Canadian broadcaster. The way they make him sound like he's the Canadian Casey Kasem or something. I mean, he's supposed to be very famous. And he, you know, interviewed people from Barbra Streisand, Joni Mitchell, Zach Galifianakis. I mean, he's very popular. He might be the Barbara Walters of Canada or whatever.
Okay.
And he's been let go from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Network, for participating in and advocating in his participation of BDSM, bondage and sadomasochism.
Okay.
And the charges against him are that he participates as the dominant one, I guess is the way you would deem it, and doing abusive things to women. Now, I don't know that that's been substantiated, and I've read several articles about it, and I haven't really found out that he's ever agreed that that's what it was. But he says the allegations that any sexual activity between him and women, kinky or not, was completely consensual, and he's always engaged in consensual BDSM, and so it really is a non-issue.
And has anybody come forward saying that?
Yeah, no one has said, oh, he whacked me and I didn't like it, or there's been no negative thing.
Kidnapped me and made me do things against my will.
Right. It's been completely, you know. His take is how should my employer have any dominion over my personal life? But, which I agree with. And then you go, okay.
To some degree.
To some degree, right? There's a little shade of gray. Not 50 shades, but there is a little shade of gray there because.
Okay.
If he was an alcoholic or a drug addict or whatever, and maybe he wasn't a broadcaster, but he was a forklift driver, then that can be a problem, right? Your employer has a right to have a say about what you do in your off hours if it affects your work.
If it affects your work.
But I don't think this was affecting his work.
But here's the thing, and this is why he is different than, let's say, you know, the guy who works at the McDonald's or the guy who works at the wherever, the office, you know, at some accounting firm or whatever. This guy is the face of the CB, whatever, Canadian Broadcast Corporation. He's the face of it. What he does 24/7 is the face of the CBC. That's the difference, is that he is that person. It's like Herb Albert. What's the guy, Albert, the basketball announcer?
The biting guy.
Marv Albert,
yes.
Yeah, Marv Albert, same sort of deal. You know, he's the voice of that basketball business, and then they find out that he had some sexual thing deal go on. What, you know, I mean, here I'm talking about it now, probably 10, 15 years later. That's what you know him for. You know him, basketball, even though he may be the smartest guy to ever announce the game. And he liked to get bit.
Fires him?
Well, I don't agree that he should be fired. I think the idea is that you should be able to do what you want to do. Just don't attach it to your employer, especially if you are the spokesperson, mouthpiece for your employer and your employer has certain rules. Now, if your employer doesn't have any rules on it and doesn't care, then it shouldn't matter. They shouldn't be able to wake up one morning and go, oh, we've decided that because we found out that, you know, you're engaging in sexual behavior. I mean, it would be like finding out that someone was gay and you didn't like it and then fired them for it.
So if he admits, okay, so let's take his persona out of it. And he is the guy from the accounting firm. Okay. Yep. And he admits to, I like to do a little BDSM and I go to this local dungeon and I go on Saturday night and it's pretty fucking awesome. And so he admits to that.
Yep.
Or it comes out that he committed domestic violence and beat up some girlfriend or whatever in a non-BDSM format. Yep. Like, so then which way do you get it? Is he going to keep his job both ways? One way? What? There's got to be like I said, this is not a black or white issue for me. I think people are allowed to do things in their private life that their employer should have no idea about.
Right. I mean, for sure.
That's the private part. Lack of judgment comes in. I'm not saying it's lack of judgment to participate in BDSM. I'm just saying that it can be looked at either way.
I think that anything that's consensual between two adults, that really is the business of those adults, two adults, whatever number of adults. I mean, it's BDSM. Yeah,
it's so true. It could be many.
It could be this guy and his, 20,000 slaves. I don't know. Who knows? But
So maybe he is. Maybe he's a guy who likes to lead women around by dog collars and at the thing on Saturday night, and everybody's got nipple clamps or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's the craziest scene you ever imagined.
Right.
And then Monday morning, he puts on a suit and he goes and he talks to, Taylor Swift and interviews her for CBC. I think people can compartmentalize the Saturday night dog collar session with the Taylor Swift thing. I think people do it every fucking day.
I think they do it. What about people who go home to bad marriages and still have to put on the happy face at work?
Right. I mean, yeah.
Or like I was saying before, you know, just 10 years ago, if someone was gay, if that news reporter was gay, might have been fired for that.
Right. Yeah, that could still happen.
It still could happen. Absolutely. So I don't know that it's much different, really. I think it's just another thing.
I guess, you know, in America, we have this puritanical weirdness that we carry around with us. So our politicians are always under the scrutiny when they have a faux pas with their sexuality, right? The Anthony Wieners of the world get in trouble. Does Canada have that puritanical thing? I mean, they're all nice and convenient and Tim Hortney.
Pretty liberal.
Right?
Yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, you talk about this BDSM thing. It's like, who hasn't played with their partner and said, hey, I'm going to give you a spanking?
That's never happened. No, I'm kidding.
I'm over here.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jeff.
Right now. Over my knee. So... I mean, isn't that the whole thing? Whatever you do with your spouse or your girlfriend, I mean, and then someone finds out, I mean, is the guy, you know, I don't know. I think the only thing that they have is if they have it in their contract that you're our representative, represent our brand. It'd be like if, you know, Ronald McDonald got caught with the Hamburglar. I mean, yeah. You can't go there. No.
I guess there are some jobs where your personal life will come into question. Mm-hmm. If you're the Pope, you know, you got to keep your personal life clean.
Talking about the Pope, you heard about what he said the other day.
Oh, he's all about science and religion holding hands now, right?
Yeah. Yes. Woo-hoo, yes. Oh, yeah.
First of all, duh. And second of all, thank goodness he said it out loud.
What's going on with that Pope?
But sadly, in the year 2014, that's the big deal. Like, because he agreed that science exists and religion should live and. It's really crazy.
I know.
But let's make one thing clear.
Yeah.
And to our degree of understanding, that if you are in the BDSM community, it's all consensual. Like, those people talk fucking ad nauseum about, are you okay? Are we okay? Is this okay? Like, to me, it's almost too much talking.
You would believe that they would talk a lot. I'm right? guessing.
I mean,
from everything I've read about it.
It's just, so if anybody knew anything about that, like, they would know that people aren't there, like, on the fence. No, people are there because they're in it to win it kind of thing. And so... on a regular Saturday night date that's not of that lifestyle, then that would be different. But I think
I'm going to have to do some more research on this business and report back.
You need to get caught up on today on sort of stuff.
I'm sure we could report back with much more information.
So anyway, long story short, I think it's an interesting topic of conversation. And
hopefully he gets his job back.
Yeah, I don't think so. He's going to get a better job or a reality show out of this. So,
sure.
Or a job at Tim Hortons. He's in Canada.
He's going to be playing Mr. Gray in the next movie, right? Although everything I hear is that's very tame compared to what's the reality of the world out there.
Oh, it is. It's not even real. Yeah, it's not.
All right, well, let's move on because we have very limited time and we have things to talk about still.
All right.
What else? Fitbit. You just recently got a Fitbit? Like, how long ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Well, congratulations.
And I'm so skinny now. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what happens is you purposely buy things so that the new version can come out the next week.
My iPhone the week before the 6, my iPad the week before the Air, and now the Fitbit before these new ones.
Mm-hmm. Although I don't think that it's a big deal. On the two items that you just got.
I'm not too worried about it. This Fitbit is doing everything I need it to do. So, yeah.
And mine I got in August, my Fitbit.
Right.
So mine isn't that much.
And we've talked about Fitbits before. We should probably just fill the listeners in. It's a little bracelet that you wear that works as a pedometer. Mm-hmm. It works as a like a base metabolic rate system. It tells you about calories that you've burned during the day. In theory, what your calorie intake should be versus what you're putting in. There's a whole interactive application or website you can go to, and most Fitbits sync wirelessly with those apps. So you don't have to plug in anything. You just sit by your phone, and all of a sudden it knows that you walked another 2,000 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our fun has been what? Tell us about the fun.
Yeah, well, Fitbit, if you have an iPhone or probably Android or whatever, mm-hmm. they have challenges. And so they have three different challenges. I'm sure they'll be adding more in the future.
Right.
They have the Daily Showdown, the Weekend Warrior, and the Workday Hustle. So right. every day you can have a daily challenge on who can get the most steps in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Weekend Warrior, which is what it sounds like, how many steps during your weekend.
Right.
And then 5 days for the work week hustle. So how many steps who gets the most steps during the work week?
And if you're friends on Fitbit, like you would be friends on Facebook or whatever, you have people who use Fitbit, you can have these challenges with your friends,
mm-hmm.
which is part of the fun.
And so what's kind of interesting is you can have friends who are not the other person's friend in the challenge that you're not friends with.
Right.
So you'll see this kind of leaderboard going on with people. And you know, you can even eventually, if you wanted to friend them, you could. But that's on...
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
We've been doing it for, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks? And you've kicked my ass, I think, on every one but one challenge.
No, I think you've done a couple challenges now that you've won.
But ultimately, it's a great motivator and very good for your incentive on, oh, Jesus, I've got, like right now, I have 7,600 steps on the day. I need 10,000 to be, call it a real day. And it's only, you know, 7-something here. I could still get out there and do another 2,000 steps and make my goal. And that's the plan.
Yeah, I'm at 8,068 steps.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, that's pretty decent. Considering when I don't look at it or when I don't, or when I'm not trying, then my step count's about 4,500 for the day, max.
Yeah. Now, what hand do you wear your...
I wear it on my left hand.
So that you're right-handed, though?
Correct. So it's my non-dominant hand.
You're not. I wear mine on my dominant hand.
Do you think it gives you extra points?
I don't know.
I always wear bracelets in my watch, and I like to think that it blends in because it does look a little funky and a little like my parole Lindsay Lohan bracelet. Like, I get a little bit nervous that people don't know what it is. But now I think they're pretty commonplace. People understand.
Yeah. I do kind of want the one. I'm a little jonesing for that one with the time on it.
The time would be nice because then you wouldn't have to wear a watch.
Or keep pulling your phone out.
Right.
Which I think that most people have given up on watches because they have a phone.
I agree. I look at my phone all the time for the time. I still wear a watch. Yeah. I think, and also the Fitbit, the only other negative is that when you push the button for the readout, you don't get the actual number of steps. You get those blinking lights. And I would like it to say 7,620. I don't need blinking lights, but that's just me.
Right. That's supposed to tell you kind of how close to your goal you are.
Correct. Right. And I do love it at the end of the day when it goes bzz, 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 and it tells me that I hit my 10,000 or whatever. I love that. That's pretty awesome.
Did you know you can set alarms on there too?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So you can like say at 8 o'clock, I want it to beep or you know, vibrate on your alarm. So, like, let's say you had to take a pill every day or you had something that you needed to be reminded about. It would totally remind you. And even if you didn't have your phone with you, because maybe you're setting alarms on your phone, but you can have the daily reminder on your hand.
I like that. That's fun.
One thing you can do.
Yeah, we recommend Fitbit highly. I think, you know, for anybody who needs to know where you're at physically, it's a good thing.
And apparently they're going to be adding a lot of the things that you've come to love out of MyFitnessPal.
Yes.
They're supposed to add a lot of that functionality into the next version of the Fitbit tracker program. That's what I hear. Yeah. So anyways, Fitbit, if you have a Fitbit, you can find me or Teresa on there and challenge us up. And we will kick your ass.
your
ass and take names. Especially if you're a buddy of mine who recently had knee surgery. I will challenge you on the day you have knee surgery, and then I will kick your ass.
I love it. Very fun.
So, yeah, we're totally Fitbit is great.
Cool.
Okay, so let's move on to our final topic. What would we call it? Our weekly, our every show we do, our show and tell.
Yes, our show and tell. I like
this. This is where you show me yours and I show you mine.
Right. do you want to go first?
Sure, I will go first. Since we are on a fitness moment, I have these really cool things that I got. I ran the Disney 10-mile Tower of Terror race here in Orlando, Florida. It's really
10
cool.
miles. Jesus. Okay. That's 10 a lot. Miles.
It's almost a half marathon.
That's almost. A long. Yeah. That might as well be a half marathon.
Right. I had 5K to go and I would have had a half marathon.
Fun.
So before the race, I went down to the expo where at Disney in Orlando, they have an expo where they show all of the different really cool running things that you can get. And so, like, I was totally down with thinking, love the running shoes they have. They're, like, very, like, boutique exclusive. You can't get them at an athletic store. You have to go to running shoe store to get some of these shoes. It's just that way. And I was like, oh, my God, these are the greatest shoes ever. And I did not buy the shoes.
Aww.
And it's great because at the expo, they give you 10% off.
Right.
Otherwise, you get nothing off. And so I was like, damn. So I could run over there during the food and wine dash and dine or whatever. Dash and dine.
I love it.
They should call it that.
They should. You're right.
The dine and dash.
That's great.
Well, anyways. So I bought these compression sleeves for my calves. That's what these are. This is my show and tell. And these are the 2XU brand, and they're awesome. I wore them for the race.
Okay.
And when I was done with the race, I had no cramps, and I felt really good. I felt like it helped.
Okay. Because they keep your muscle warm, and they keep it contracted or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was.
And have you been having leg cramps in your runs before?
I have had that before.
Do you ever run with pants? Like long running pants or whatever? No, you always wear shorts. So this helps keep it warm. Okay.
I'm never cold anyways. It was really more of a muscle thing because I don't necessarily stretch out enough.
Well, and you're also in Florida where it's never really that cold, right?
Well, not when I run. But we get some cold mornings. We will. Okay. It's getting into the November.
Right.
We'll have frost on the windows for a day or two.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, when you go to the Disneyland half marathon in January, it's fucking cold standing out there at 5:30 in the morning, and your muscles need to be covered. And you can't cover because you're going to run 13 miles, and you're going to peel off all those layers and lose them on the street, because that's what happens with all those clothes at those big races. You know, they just gather them all up and donate them. I get it. But, you know, you can't wear a lot of stuff because you know you're just going to lose it along the way. So this is a great idea. The other thing I saw this week at a run that I did was a thing called a stuff cuff. And it's similar to your calf sock, but you wear it on your arm. Mm-hmm. And then you can fold it over and there's a pocket in it for your phone and a key and your ID and all that stuff. So I thought that was kind of clever because it's an arm warmer, but it also helps facilitate holding on to your stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't see that there. So that's neat.
That's cool.
Okay. Neat. Well, that was my show and tell. What you got?
All right. Mine's a little embarrassing, but you know me. I am the self-help addicted queen, right? I love I love self-help books. I love new programs. I love everything about it. And so I'm a sucker for Tony Robbins and all things Tony Robbins. And I get it. And I think we've talked about it before. I get it. He looks like Lurch from Adam's Family and that he's super creepy because he's 7 feet tall. But I dig his message. And for whatever reason, it speaks to me. So I appreciate him. Well, I'm a follower of his on Facebook. And he also advocates for some self-help motivational guru named Brendan Bouchard. So Brendan Bouchard just wrote a book called The Motivation Manifesto. And if you sent off this little email form. You could get the book for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping, $5 or whatever. And then you get the free online video course to accompany the book. And I don't know why. Why am I such a sucker for this stuff, Judd? But I love it. I'm just all about it. So I sent off for it right away because Tony Robbins said so. And then I watched the hour-long video that the guy did and about how you're supposed to, how you can have your, the most abundant, productive, efficient, fiscally successful life ever based on his 9 tenets of success that I'm going to learn over the next 12 weeks and when I read the book. And I don't know why I'm a sucker for it, but God damn it, I am.
Do you feel like it's a win?
I always do when I get these things the first couple of days. I'm like, this is it. This is my new system and it's going to work forever and I'm going to be super successful. And then I revert to my old patterns and then nothing ever works.
You know, I'm curious about the number 9. Why do you choose number 9? There's not one of the numbers that you use.
There's 9 declarations that you proclaim throughout the book that make you want to be the best person that you can be. And I don't, maybe it's my midlife crisis. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I'm looking for this total revamp on my day-to-day activity in work and relationships and life. And I just always think that the next book or the next podcast or the next program is going to turn the page for me and I'll stop being how I am and who I am. And I'll start being the true authentic person I'm supposed to be. And the joke is I probably already am. I just, you know, I'm always looking for the next guru. Do you have a guru?
Do I have a guru?
Like, you know, people could say it could be Dr. Oz or it's a Susie Orman or it's Tony Robbins or it's like, is there somebody that you will always look at their feed or their thing or their, you would always get their book because you really like their information?
John Stewart.
John Stewart. Okay. But he doesn't advocate for a different lifestyle, right? Like, but you appreciate his opinions and his take on it.
Yeah, I mean, right. I don't really have a thing like that. I am more, you know, I follow these inspirational places on Facebook. And then I, you know, for my life seems to be these little, you know, I don't want to call them memes because I don't really think of them as memes, but they're little square sound bites of inspiration. That come across my screen every day, and I repost them, and they give me pause to reflect about something.
I agree. I think I love that stuff too, and I subscribe to a lot of those pages and get a lot of that information, and I absolutely love it. And I write down quotes, and I've got a quotes page in my journal that I, you know, write down things that inspire me, and I'm trying to live this way. And I don't know why it just calls to me. And what I don't know why, A, I can't just be happy with who I am and what I am right now. That's frustrating. And B, does anybody really have the secret? I mean, I don't think anybody does. The one thing I will say about this Brendan guy is that he fully admits that of the last 10 years since The Secret came out, where, you know, you just think positive thoughts and everything great is going to happen in your life, that is such bullshit. Does it hurt to think positive thoughts? No. Is that the only thing that's going to make change in your life? Absolutely not. You have to put in the work and the effort, not just believe in positive thoughts and your vision board and all that shit.
I really think that happiness, if you want to talk about happiness, it's about how you treat other people. If you treat other people nice and you're consistent about it, you'll be happy. I really believe that.
Even
if you are pissed off and hate them, it's like that. It's like the picture of the little cartoon of the old man and the old woman, and it's raining, and the old man takes the umbrella and puts it over his wife, even though he's pissed off.
Right.
That's what life is all about. You do the right thing despite of circumstance. All the time.
Okay. I don't disagree with you. I think you're right.
And at the end, you'll be a happy person. With my ex, I do plenty of stuff for her, even now. And I don't think anything about it. It's not about favors and who's done more for anybody. It's just, you just do things because it's the right thing to do. And you help people out that need it because it's the right thing to do. You know, Okay. You help people learn how to do their job, and then they'll, you know, it's almost a karma aspect of life.
So that's how you take it. All right.
You know, and, you know, walk around with a smile on your face. Maybe I'm happier now as a single guy than I've ever been. So I can say that, but, you know.
Yeah, you're in a different place maybe, which is good. It's great. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that it's interesting that there are, so many different ways to achieve success or have success or define success, and B, everybody's got a different perspective about what that means, right?
Oh, wait, we're talking about success. I was talking about happiness.
Yeah, they're not mutually inclusive, right? They can be exclusive.
That's true. You got to break out the knives for that stuff.
All right, on that note, I'm done showing and telling.
Dang it. All right. Let's wrap this up. We talked about Ebola. And then we talked about catcalling and the craziness going on there. Can you be fired for being kinky? Having a more off-the-beat lifestyle. Then we talked about Fitbit and challenges and how we can live a healthy lifestyle. Then, of course, our continuing segment, Show and Tell, we did that. So, great podcast. We will chat with you later.
Talk at you later.
Hey, I'm going to give you a spanking.